It's the Brady and the Bunch podcast, presented by 101.3 The Game.
Welcome back. It is the Brady and the Bunch podcast. Very excited to have in studio with us another local radio host in this market from our sister station 92.1 WVTK, Bruce Zeman, co-host of Bruce and Hobbs, also has a podcast, the Bruce and Hobbs podcast, also author, also animal activist. How many other things are in this resume that I'm leaving out? Voice of Middlebury hockey.
None that really pays well.
That's why there are 14 things,
you know,
on that list. So, Bruce, I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you for having us on your podcast. It's awesome. I started listening to it a couple of weeks ago. Honored to be here.
Well, let me ask you my first question. Bruce, that's you. Hobbs is a dog. A dachshund, if I'm not mistaken.
Dachshund.
Okay. How is a dog a co-host of a radio show? Tell me the science behind. How does this work?
Well, he is able to, first of all, he's my service dog. And so he's able to make noises, and I'll look at him, and he'll do things. He's trained, and so he'll help with contesting. He'll bark when I'll actually ask him stuff, and he'll cry and make noises,
So this is not like a voiceover like Scooby-Doo?
No.
Like, I really just assumed, like, okay, Hobbs, what do you think? And then there's another voice going, well, Bruce, I think this. That's not how it works.
Not at all. He's trained, and so on our station, when we do contests, I put all the names of the contestants on the floor, and whichever one he steps on is usually our winner. And, you know, we've done some Facebook Live stuff with that, and it's really pretty cool. It's the only one in the nation where there's a dog as a full-time staff member that's on the radio each morning.
No, he's a service dog.
He is my service dog. I have PTSD.
Okay.
From rescue that I've done forever. And so he is a rescued domestic violence survivor that I rescued back in 2009 from a pretty bad abuse situation. And he went through the training, and now, you know, he helps me.
Hmm. Now, so Bruce, you got him 2009, so he's at least 10 years old.
Yeah, we think he's about 11-ish or so. And, you know, he's getting up there, but he's still a firecracker, I'll
say
that.
Okay, so have you had a dog co-host before Hobbs?
I hadn't, and what was really interesting about that, Brady, is that I came up with this concept kind of because we had to.
Yeah.
At the time. It was back in 2008, 2009, the market was not really great for radio, and so our station was having some issues, you know, having some trouble, like most radio stations were back in the day. And I came up with this idea to make him my co-host, and he saved the radio station.
Wow. So when you go out and do remotes and stuff, Hobbs comes with you, and is he more popular than you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because the listeners are very invested in him being there. It's not just a gimmick, because on my show, which is different from a lot of other shows, it's a little bit more folksy, a little bit more talk. This is what we talk about. I'm just the same on the radio as I am in person.
Now, you have multiple other dogs, and I know because you are an animal activist, we'll get to that here shortly because that's a big part of who you are, too. You have multiple other dogs. Do they get jealous of Hobbs being the radio star?
Well, what we also do is I have another dog, Zoe, who's another rescue, and it's funny because it seems each one has got a rescue story that's almost
More
difficult than the one before. But sometimes we do swap them out we don't stress them out. And but, you know, our listeners know their stories, and so they want to see them. Because if you think about this, in all the cases, all of them were victims of cruelty and abuse.
Yeah.
And so the people that did that to them were trying to be mean to them and you know, essentially end their lives, when in fact they failed and exactly the opposite happened.
Hmm. Crazy. So, yeah. I mean, so they are an integral part of the radio station, but I was going to say, can you bring them both to work even if it's Hobbs's day to talk?
I do bring them both to work, and sometimes because I have four dogs.
You have four? Okay, I knew it was multiple.
And they all do come to the station, and, you know, depending on what we're doing, you know, clients want to see them. It's not uncommon for me to get off the air and have families there with their kids, and it's a big part of what we do.
Now, you've been doing radio for 30-plus years. Do you remember what radio was like before a dog co-host?
It was a lot different, and back in the day, everything was a lot more manual. And I jokingly say sometimes that radio has come a long way. But with computers and stuff, as you know firsthand, it's a little bit easier, but it's also harder because things can go a lot wronger, if that's a word. Things can go awry quicker, and sometimes it's harder to find out where it is.
Rich will tell me about what it was like doing radio back in the day, and I can't even imagine just the level of focus that you needed to have to be able to, you know, you're putting on this record and taking on that CD and the commercial comes from this place and this commercial comes from that place. I can't imagine that world.
It was very – it was a lot slower and better in some ways and not in the other. I mean, the technology now is so much better. I mean, you can do interviews, you know, on Skype. You can do interviews over the iPhone. You know, back then it was all in person or not at all. I mean, we used what was called a four-track machine, and you were using razor blades and everything. A lot more complicated. I think radio sounds a lot better now. The only challenge is you know, sometimes you lose the personality aspect of it because someone is, you know, calling you from, you know, sometimes Europe.
Yeah. What do you like about doing radio in Addison County?
The fact that the listeners that we have are so invested with what we do. You know, again, most of the people that are down there that listen to us know the work that I do. I mean, I travel all over the country and talk about animals, and the people will come up to you at different events and they'll say, you know, hey, I saw that you're working on this. And it's different than just selling stuff, because anybody can put on, you know, ads for 500 car dealers or insurance, you know, businesses or something like that. When people say that you've impacted them and they've got their family with them, That's what really matters.
Is it more, I don't know if more fun or more fulfilling is the right word, but you don't do radio in Burlington, and Burlington is the biggest area, so people want to be in Burlington inherently because that's where the action is, but you are in a smaller place. Do you like that? Does it feel more community-oriented even being outside of the bigger city?
Well, it's interesting because our station has a pretty good signal.
You can hear it in Burlington.
Yeah, so it is up here. It's more personable, and so it is good and you know it is good and bad.
Yeah.
I think that you can have more of an intimate relationship with your listeners and some of your advertisers too.
Yeah.
But you know, obviously, the people that listen to you are going to listen where they are.
Why did you get into radio in the first place? What inspired you to get into radio?
I started working in radio when I was 15 years old, and I was on one of our sister stations.
Breaking labor laws, I'm sure.
you know, this whole 40-hour a week thing, you know, we do that sometimes in 2 days in radio. You know that. And the gentleman that owns our company hired me when I was just about 16 years old. So I've known him for 30-something years.
Wow.
And I got into radio because I wanted to make a difference. And I was amazed by how you can connect with people, and they could be anywhere. And, you know, I used that over the years to have a really worldwide following with the Bruce and Hobbs brand and our podcast. And what I started doing back in 19, you know, you're able to do now, and especially with Facebook and the social media platforms, it just gives you a huge range for your message.
You wanted to make a difference. And is that... See, I look at that and say, okay, like Delilah, I think makes a difference. I think she makes a difference, but I feel like it's hard to have that kind of impact when you're on a music station because you're playing a lot of songs, so there's not as much talk time. So you have to make a difference pretty quickly and pretty wittily in everything that you do. I imagine that to be a very difficult skill.
It's a difficult skill, but we are really blessed. I've worked for a lot of folks over the years, and the folks that own our station are some of the best people I've ever met. They allow us to do this. I mean, it's their sandbox, right? And so they let us share our message. And, you know, social media has changed things because you can direct people to your Facebook page or your Instagram page. But with our show, people are so invested. And when you do things that are great, you take on big projects and they hear about them, people want to be involved. And so that drives listenership to the station.
You and Hobbs have a bobblehead from the Lake Monsters a couple of years ago. How did that come about?
Well, there was this contest that the Lake Monsters put on, and they had the 7 largest stations in Vermont on this contest. And we were kind of an afterthought, to be honest with you. And we have a pretty big following, especially amongst animal groups and different dachshund groups and everything. And we wound up winning the contest handily.
Wow. Who did you beat out?
Our other sister station, Star 92.9.
Was there a Mike and Mary bobblehead promotion that you beat out?
It was Nolan and Tara, who were amazingly talented radio hosts, but
you crushed them.
We sort of did, yeah. And, you know, it caused some consternation, you know, on the other side of the glass here. But, you know, we've got a really big following. And when people say, look what this rescue dog has accomplished, you know, now he's going to be a bobblehead. I mean, we've, you know, knock on wood, we've done some other things. But, I mean, we won that contest pretty handily.
What did that mean to you?
It meant that what we were doing mattered.
Yeah.
You know, we've been in some other places. Unfortunately, you know, not everybody gets what we do. And yeah. I understand that. And, you know, there are people that have told me flat out the dog thing doesn't work. Well, based on the Arbitron and Nielsen ratings, it does work because we're number one in our market. And we've got an enormous following around the world because of our message.
So you have rescue dogs. You work with rescues all around the country, right? I mean, especially you're really big at the Rutland Animal Shelter, if I'm not mistaken, right?
We donate all the money that we make from sales of our books and bobbleheads and some of the other stuff we have on bruceandhobbs.com. 100% of that money goes to there's 203 rescue organizations all around the world. Most of them are in New England or like the ones in Rutland. The one in Rutland is Maple Leaf Mutts, but we've got the Addison County Humane Society. But we've got little rescues in, you know, Alabama or Texas that follow us. And so when we sell stuff, we donate all the money to them. And it really impacts their work because, believe it or not, you know, $40 to you and I, that's like you and I going out to lunch.
Yeah.
But to a shelter in Alabama, that's the difference between life and death for these animals. And I mean, it's really a big deal.
Where did the love of animals come from? Is it something you've had since birth? Is it something that came about in your 20s? I don't know. Where did it come about for you?
I really don't know. I just remember that growing up, we had animals. And when I got older, I decided a big part of our message, Brady, is anti-bullying work. We do a lot of stuff with that.
With humans and with...
With humans and animals. And interesting enough, it's a fact. You know, people can Google this. People that abuse and hurt animals hurt people. It's not something that some crazy animal activist made up. It's a fact. And so I wanted to make a difference because I was bullied when I was growing up, and I was also a bully myself. And one of the messages that I give to the kids that I talk to now, 40-something years later, this is true, I remember the name of the kid that I picked on, and I'm ashamed of it. And
so it's like in the end of Billy Madison, remember?
Yeah.
When the guy, I can't remember exactly, but he calls the guy that he bullied and the guy takes him off his hit list because he had apologized to him years later.
I've never been able to apologize to this young man, but I think about him almost every day and what a jerk I was. And so when I talk to the kids, I say to them, don't let this happen to you because it's really not a good memory. It's something I'm really kind of ashamed of.
Yeah. So where did the time commitment, the wherewithal to be involved as an animal act? Look, there's one thing to be an animal lover. A lot of people like animals. They have pets, et cetera. They take great care of them. It's another thing to dedicate a lot of your adult life's work towards helping animals. Where did that come from?
When I lived in New Jersey, I had an apartment at the time, and I actually got evicted because I had a previous dachshund whose name was Nathan. And in most states, animals are considered property.
Yeah.
And so they're worth nothing more than this box of tissues here. That's it. And so basically what happened in this case, we wound up going to court. And during this time, and I was 20 years old or something like that, I found out that they had no rights. They had very little protections. This was in New Jersey. And then I just decided that I needed to do something about this. And so, you know, the Cliff Notes version of this is that we went to court against a huge real estate company, and we won our case. And
so you won your case to not be evicted?
To not be evicted.
What was the reason? Were you going to be evicted because of the dog's
behavior?
Because
of the animals. No, not because of the dog's behavior. Just it was an arbitrary process where they just decided they didn't want dogs anymore.
Okay, gotcha.
And so the attorney that we used raised constitutional issues about removing a pet from a family. And unless someone's an idiot, you're not going to go near. You're not going to go near that.
Yeah.
You're not going to near something like that. So we won. And so then people started calling me about how you handle things like that. Because it's pretty stressful when you've got, getting letters from lawyers and everything. I was on ABC News in New York.
Wow.
And they came to see us because I said, my family members are not disposable. Not at all. And so that was kind of like a media catchphrase. And, you know, the next thing you know, you're on ABC News. And these are New York television stations. They're interviewing you about why you're standing up for yourself.
And you're 20 years old.
I was 20 years old. And I just said, the broadcaster was Roz Abrams. And I just said, my family members are not disposable. And she asked me, and I really didn't do it, you know, to get attention. They said, you know, what are the odds of you getting this? What are the odds of you getting rid of your dog? And I said, they've got a better chance of seeing God.
Yeah.
And that quickly, this is, again, before Facebook and everything else.
You would have been viral today.
Yeah, it would have been viral, but we got a lot of attention because of that. And they realized that they should probably leave us alone. But, you know, in that case, it was because it involved people. I mean, they were trying to evict senior citizens and people that couldn't defend themselves.
Okay.
And so where did that come from? Because I don't like seeing bad things happen to vulnerable people. You know, somebody does something to you and I, or you or I, we're going to get an attorney and say that's not going to happen. A lot of people don't have the wherewithal or the resources to do that. You know, they're afraid, they're intimidated. And sometimes you just have to step up and say, I got this, I got you. And that's, you know, that's what we did.
So you give all the proceeds from your podcast, from your website, from your book to animal rescues. Where did it come from, the idea for you to be an author? You talk about having you have multiple books. Where did it come from for you to be an author?
So when Bruce and Hobbs came to be and people started coming to us from, I'm telling you, Brady, from everywhere.
Hmm.
This is a groundbreaking show. Where did you come up with this idea? You know, you mentioned about Burlington being a big market. I teach at the National Animal Rights Convention every year. And I've had radio stations in markets like Miami, Los Angeles, Chicago saying, how do you do this? And I just said, I do it because it has to happen.
Yeah.
You know? So we put it out there that this is my best friend, my pup, is going to be part of the show. And people picked up on it. And then they came to us and they said, listen, this is a great idea, but you need to do more. You need to use your platform to show that people can make a difference. One person. I'm a DJ. I don't have, you know, all these names and titles after my name. You know, I don't have a doctorate in bullying or social science or whatever. I just care. And so when you go to people and you say, listen, this is what I'm doing, and if I can do it, so can you.
Well, you talk about what's the basis of the book? A children's book, right? They're children's
books?
It's
a children's book called Hobbs Goes Home, and it's about how Hobbs was brought to the animal shelter in Addison County. And he was brought to the animal shelter by a woman whose husband and three children were abusing him. And he was beaten almost to death by the man and these three kids, and he was bleeding from literally every
opening. This is true?
This is 100% legit. He was bleeding from literally every opening he had
God.
I first saw him. And I was so taken aback. And you know, Brady, I've been doing this a long time. Not much really shocks me anymore. I was so taken aback by the way he looked. I said, I can't leave this dog here. So we brought him home, and you know, the rest, as they say, is kind of history.
How long did it take for Hobbs to open up to you? Because I know sometimes with rescue dogs, and we have a rescue dog, and I'd never had a dog before, so I didn't have any preconceived notion or expectations of how long it should take him to feel acclimated, etc. How long did it take for Hobbs to get acclimated and get over that stuff and feel comfortable with you?
When we brought him home, he was missing skin on the back of his head, and I was trembling with rage when I saw this. I was so angry that someone could do this. But on the other hand, to him, you couldn't show that. I had to show him that this is a safe place. So as crazy as it sounds to a lot of folks, I brought him home. And as I was driving him home, I said, when we got home, I said, this is your home now. You're safe here. You know, this is your bed, your toys, your food. When you're ready, here we are. So it was maybe a day and a half, and I was watching, this is how long ago this was, Sopranos.
Okay.
And he comes out from around the chair, and he
perfectly
looks at me.
Safe show for a dog to feel comfortable with.
Absolutely. So he comes out, and he looks at me, and he runs up, first time, jumps on my lap, gives this huge sigh, and that was it.
Wow. It didn't take very long.
Maybe 3 days. And we've been the best of friends since then, and it's probably the most, you know, with apologies to my wife, it's probably the most important relationship I have.
Really? So why do you say that?
Well, if you think about this, think about the relationships you have in your life, right?
Yep.
There's a bunch of relationships, whether it's, you know, husband and wife, mom and dad, brother and sister, a boy and his dog. I mean, it's one of those relationships that are just critical. And, you know, unconditional love, and he knows that I will protect him. And so we really do everything together. It's not just like a branding thing or a marketing thing. Like if you're down in Addison County, we're together all the time. People come into the station, he's with me.
Yeah.
We're having lunch, he's with me. We're in the bank, he's with me. So it's not just this gimmick thing. We really are best friends.
Not to be Freudian, because I'm not a psychologist. I'm just more curious about this. Is your desire and your need to care so much as an adult, does that come from like a overcompensating for what you say you were a bully growing up? Or is it just the flip, you know, naturally you got older, the flip just switched and you're like, okay, I'm going to be this person now.
This is going to sound really crazy, but I've said this in many interviews before. I kind of wish that my father would have seen or my parents would have seen what I was doing and really just, you know, taken me out to the woodshed.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it would have happened then. And I think it is. I think that's a good question because I think it is realizing that, you know, you need to kind of make up and kind of compensate for what you did. I mean, it was not good. Hmm. Not good.
How old were you? Because, like, we all got bullied in some way, in some capacity. But, like, I just picture, you know, I don't know what is normal, just boys being boys, and what is to the level that it seems to have scarred you to some degree.
You know, I was in high school, and, you know, high school is competitive. You've got – I went to a Catholic high school, and so it was even more like a lot of testosterone going around all boys high school. And I just think it was, you know, just someone that wasn't strong enough to say – meaning me – to say that this is not okay. And I really do regret that. Like, again, my father didn't take me to the woodshed and say this doesn't go on here. But again, he comes from a generation where, you know, boys will be boys and – but that's
toughen
not,
up.
But it's not okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, now, and I mean that when I say that, like, don't be that person that 30 years later still thinks about that kid.
President Obama wrote the foreword to one of your books.
Right.
How, I mean, I guess I have multiple questions on that. How did that come about? Why was he inspired to do it? Does he do that often? Is this a normal thing for him? Kind of take me through that.
Well, Governor Shumlin, when he was the governor of Vermont, and I were friends, and he would come on my show all the time, just like Governor Scott does now, and Governor Douglas before him. And he got wind of my book, and so Peter Shumlin took the book and sent it to President Obama. And the story goes is that he got stuck in the motorcade with the president on the way to an economic summit, and he pulled it out of his bag, and President Obama read it in front of him in the limousine and said, "This is a fantastic book." Who wrote it? And it was me, obviously, and my wife. And
how long is the book, by the way? Is it a children's book?
It's a children's book.
10 pages, hard pages you flip through, or is it 30 pages, easy to read?
Yeah, it's 28 pages. It's basically for K to 8, although you know, high school kids can read it. And what we've done, Brady, is we read this book in schools across the country. And you know, as our show today, I've read this book in 285 schools in 6 states.
Wow.
And so, you know, when we do those visits, we do those presentations, all the money that we make, because there's a fee for us to come, all donated to our charities. But it's it was very impactful because so we've heard is that President Obama used to take 5 letters every day from random Americans and actually write them himself.
Hmm.
I actually have a letter from him. And, you know, there's a paragraph that is obviously cut and pasted because I don't even know my own website and logo.
Yeah.
And that's there. But the rest of it supposedly was actually written and signed by him.
Wow. And what did that mean to you? What did it mean to you that the governor believed in it enough to show him? What did it mean that the president believed enough to take his time to write you something and write for the book?
It meant that what we were doing mattered. There's a great speech by Denzel Washington. I don't know if you've ever seen this before. It's a speech that he gave at a college. And it's about dreaming big and doing things that matter. And so in his speech, he says, all of us have been to funerals. All of us have seen hearses. You're never going to see a hearse with a U-Haul behind it because you ain't taking it with you.
Hmm.
And that's why we donate everything that we make to charity because we want to make a difference. We want to make it matter. And I got a really quick story that I have to tell you about this because it's kind of germane to what we're talking about. So all of us can make a difference, right?
Yep.
Whether it's on your awesome podcast or your other big show, which I think is one of the best sports shows on radio.
Thank you. Buttering up the host. We like that.
Not at all. I travel all over the country, and I think you've got one of the best sports shows on the radio. But Christmas Eve last year, get a phone call, and you know, you're in this business. You know, there is not a lot of time off that we have.
Yep.
Christmas Eve, I get a call from a shelter in Alabama. Can you send us the money from our book donations today? And I'm thinking to myself, it's Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
At 4 o'clock. And all I want to do is just spend time with my family. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I was a little irritated because I want to, you know, have time with my family. So I said, you know, I can get it in the mail next week, but it's Christmas Eve. And she said, can I talk to you, not, you know, shelter manager to CEO of company or radio show guy? And I said, sure. She said, this is Alabama. Okay. People don't take care of kids down here.
Yeah.
Okay. If I'm able to tell the executive director of our shelter that this $40 from your group, Bruce and Hobbs, is in the mail, they won't make me come in here tomorrow and euthanize every puppy in here.
Oof.
So you know what that meant, Brady?
That meant $40, PayPal, Venmo, whatever you got.
It meant I put on my jacket and I went down to the mailbox. I put it in the mailbox. I called her and let her know that it was on the way. Do I know if I saved these animals? No, but I gave them a chance. And so every once in a while, as long as I've done this, you need somebody to kind of give you a little smack and say, hey, listen, you know, you can, one simple act can change. Think about those lives you can change. What if one of those puppies goes to be a service dog that helps people like mine does? I mean, the impact that you can have from one small act of kindness is mind-blowing.
You are obviously working to save all animals, but why dachshunds for you? Why are those the right breed for you?
Well, again, you know, I have PTSD, as I said, and the way I got that, I know exactly when it happened, and my family has had dachshunds forever, but the way this came about, during Hurricane Katrina, way back when, I was down there doing animal rescue.
2005?
Five or six, okay. But I was down there, and I was down there for a month, and the very abbreviated version of this is that that trip to New Orleans cost me my first marriage. I was told to choose between my work for animals and my marriage, and, well, I chose the animals.
Wow.
And which is fine. But I was looking in a house for these dachshund puppies that the residents of New Orleans, they were told to leave them in their house, and they'd be able to come back. Well, the government didn't let them come back for weeks. So I was in this house looking for these two puppies, and I'm not a really brave guy. We have people shooting at us. We're in 6 to 8 feet of water with acid and all these bugs all over the place. Couldn't find them, Brady. Looked everywhere. And
you were trying to reunite them with the owners
at
this
families,
point? Okay.
With the families. Every house we went into, imagine trying to do this. Every house that we went into for weeks, everything was dead. I mean, just destroyed.
Yeah.
Can't find them. Getting ready to leave. And as we're getting ready to walk out the front door, I stepped on something. And you're in basically a police uniform, like the pants and
yeah.
the And I stepped on something crunchy, and I'm like, oh, I stepped on a bunch of glass. And it wasn't glass. It was the two dachshund puppies that I was looking for that were actually melted.
Oh, my God.
Like color forms. And right then and there, something just snapped. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And I just – it was not okay. A lot of counseling, a lot of other work, which is why I still have that today. And so that's why – the dachshund thing rang so true with me.
I've talked with people about PTSD, usually military groups, where they're trying to combat PTSD or the effects of it. What was your experience? I don't know. So is it a depression? Is it just going into a shell? Is it anger? All of the above? I mean, when we say someone's battling PTSD, what does that mean to you?
In my case, it's anxiety and panic attacks. Okay. I will wake up sometimes with nightmares about bad things happening to my animals and not being able to do anything about it. And so there's a power thing. And so what they do is they tell you – the way they treat that is what's called flooding. They just make you keep talking about it. And you know, they'll say to you, like, nothing's going to happen to Hobbs now. He's with you. He's safe. And they keep talking about it so often that it desensitizes that, you know, emotion. And they do that. That's how they – in my case, that's how they treat it.
You know, we've had on the podcast – Lauren Maloney from 2244 News. We've had on Aaron Alamed from the Humane Society of Chittenden County and asked them the same question I'm going to ask you because I'm always fascinated in people's answers. The work that you do, in Lauren's case, the news or the work with animal rescues, it can be a pretty depressing place. You see bad things. You hear bad things. You report on bad things. You see animals in bad situations. How do you remain so positive? Because, look, when an animal gets placed in a new home, that's a great ending. But what leads up to that ending is oftentimes pretty heartbreaking. How do you handle that emotionally? Because it's hard.
Most of the time, it's heartbreaking. Just to give you some example, I mean, listen, I like to think, you know, as anybody on radio does, that your show is a big deal, right? You know, we're in Vermont. You know, we're not in New York. We're not in Miami. We have a pretty big following, but, you know, we're not, you know, in New York. We probably get asked, I would say, anywhere between 10 and 20 times a week for help.
Wow.
And if we're able to help one time, we're lucky. As we're doing this show today, literally as I was coming up here to do this, I'm involved in a horse rescue right now. And I don't know how it's going to end. But you celebrate the victories and you have to really keep those in the forefront because you're right. I always say to people, that doing rescue is one of the most rewarding things you can do, but there is absolutely, as you so rightly say, there is a real cost to doing this.
Every year, and at the time we're taping this, and I don't know when this is going to air, but we're a week away from the start of the Saratoga racing season. Are you against horse racing? Are you someone who believes that that's animal cruelty? Or, hey, they live really good lives, they're taken real good care of, and then that's it? I'm just curious, if we're relating something about this to sports, I'm just curious your view on that.
I'll answer your question by talking about the situation I'm working on right now. The phone call that I got this morning, while I was on the air in Middlebury, was a gentleman whose horse that he used to race is now at a slaughter pen in Pennsylvania. He sold it, and now the animal is going to be slaughtered for horse meat, and he wants to get the horse back.
Okay.
And it's owned by someone else. I don't know who owns it, and so we're trying to figure that out. So again, am I against it? I don't really know enough about horse racing to really answer that question, but I will say this. When you bring an animal into your home or your family, to me, they're not property. My animals don't make money for me. Now, there are some people that say that that's not true because you make all this money from Bruce and Hobbs. My animals live fairly well.
Yeah.
They get tucked in at night. They have beds. They have a mom and dad. They have better medical care than I do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a responsibility to sharing your life with an animal, and what an awful feeling that horse must feel being part of someone's family, sharing their life, and now who knows what's going to happen. So now it's going to be a total stranger. If I'm able to make this happen, that's going to save him, and I just don't know.
Totally now going to flip 180, completely 180. We've talked a lot about radio, talked a lot about work with animal rescues, author, etc. You're also a pretty big sports fan. And you're the voice of Middlebury hockey. And that has been for a long time, that's been a really, really good gig in college hockey, because I know it's been down the last couple of years, but Middlebury is one of the storied programs in all of Division III. How did you get that gig?
Well, being with WVTK, they were looking for somebody to do their hockey. I was in the National Hockey League for about 4.5 years with the Devils in their PR department. And I've been the voice of the New Jersey Grizzlies down in the it was the New Jersey semi-pro. I don't even remember what the numbers are, but it was semi-pro roller hockey. Down
somewhere
there.
Where Arnie's kid can play eventually,
right? And cross-check and slash and everything, just like Arnie does. So they asked me to come, and if I would do it. And you're right. It's a great gig, and getting to meet the players. And when you walk into the Kenyon Arena, it's almost intimidating when you see how many banners are up there, and you realize the greatness of that program.
How does the program get back? Because we, Norwich in this area has won a national championship in the last 2 years and got to the national championship this game. Plattsburgh, they've been down a little bit lately too, but they've won national championships under Bob Emery. How does Middlebury get back and compete with those programs regionally and then recompete nationally?
Well, it's interesting because they have had a couple of down years, but last year they made the playoffs for the first time in a couple of seasons. They've got an influx of youth, and they've got some size now. I think in the past, some of their issues have been getting defensemen that are, not to get too technical here sports-wise, but...
it's all right. We're a sports station.
No, I get it. But having defensemen that are quick out of the zone, in other words, getting a quick breakout like a Torrey Krug can do for the Bruins. And they've got a kid now by the name of Brendan Dawson, who's one of the best skaters I've ever seen. And he can... Any mistakes that he makes, he can make up for literally instantly because his skating is so good.
Do you have any time for your wife, by the way, between the dogs, between hockey, between your love for sports, between traveling around? Do you have any time for your wife? Like, I'm picturing a very, very small pocket of time that you actually have available.
Did she pay you to ask that question?
No. You said that your work with animals cost you your first marriage, so I'm going to assume that this next marriage is... It takes a special person to be able to handle being with you and your schedule.
You know, I married up. Really did. I married up because I married someone, my soulmate that gets what I do. When you ask people what they do, sometimes people are cops or soldiers or, cable installers. I save dogs. That's what I do.
So you put that on if you could put one thing on your tombstone, it would be that over radio personality.
I would like to have it say I did things that matter, whether it's for kids or animals, because the impact you can have with saving some of these lives, you meet people, you know, it's the serendipity or, you know, the 6 degrees of separation, whatever it is. You meet people and things just happen. You know, you can have a speaking engagement where you touch people so much that you inspire another kid to do what you're doing. You know, I'm not 20 years old anymore, so I'm not going to be climbing up the outside of buildings during hurricanes. I can't do it anymore. But I would want to be remembered as somebody that did things to help animals. And, you know, my wife is she runs my company.
Yeah.
She is the managing partner of Bruce and Hobbs. And a lot of times when I set stuff up, I'll do things sometimes without really thinking about the logistics of making it happen, just that it has to happen. And a lot of the rescues that we do, Brady, like the doggy that I rescued 2 years ago, Zoe, who you've seen here, she just made it happen. And she's a world-renowned photographer. She's got exhibits in museums all over the world, and yet she takes time to do this. I mean, that's a pretty special person.
You inspire a lot of people. Who inspires you?
Who inspires me? Well, the people that actually do the work that don't get the credit. You know, like you and I are on the radio right now. Everybody knows who you are. I mean, you're one of the top sports personalities in New England radio. People know who I am down by me. But what about the people that, like right now where we're doing this, are cleaning the poop out of cages or sitting in front of a supermarket and getting that $10 to bring to the animal shelter? Those are the people that inspire me, because I do. I'm not just saying this. I wake up sometimes in the middle of the night wondering whether I'm doing enough, you know, because it's not – the glamorous stuff is not really where the work is done. It's the people that are doing the stuff on the ground, the people that are going through the flood of adoption applications to make sure it's a good home so the animal doesn't come back. Those are the people that are inspiring me, because they're the ones that actually do the work.
Well, if people want to find you and find Hobbs, they can every morning on 92.1 WVTK. Good signal all the way up here in Burlington or wherever you are listening around the Champlain Valley. If they're inspired to donate to Bruce and Hobbs, how can they do so?
All they have to do is they can go to bruceandhobbs.com. There's information on how to contact us. And really, if you're, you know, tens of thousands of listeners want to learn about what we do, read our story, learn about what we do. And you know what? Maybe instead, I don't need you to donate to us. Donate to your local animal shelter or buy an extra bag of dog food. You know, one of the things, I always end my show with saying that, you know, nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. And that extra bag of dog food that you bring to the local Humane Society, it may seem like nothing to you, but that really is the difference between life and death for a lot of these shelters. Because the shelters that we have here, Brady, we're spoiled. Because they're not like this everywhere else. In the South, a dog usually has 72 hours before they're euthanized. You know how it is. Sometimes you don't even know your dog is missing for that long.
Right.
And it's over. You know, where we are, some of the shelters that we work with, most of them are, you know, the dogs are never euthanized for time or space. And we reunite them with a lot of families.
Well, Jess, my girlfriend, she volunteers at the Humane Society of Chittenden County. And I've been there. I've seen the facility. And it's like the country club of animal shelters, and it's amazing to see the work that they're doing. Again, we had Aaron Almed from the Humane Society of Chittenden County on our July 4th podcast. It's kind of a special thing there. So it is amazing the work that people do. And you know, I didn't even know that really rescuing animals was a thing until – because I was just – like I said, I didn't grow up with pets. And I didn't even know that rescuing animals was a thing. And now it feels like it's trending towards being the preferred way of getting a family pet.
It really is. I mean, you have to do your research, though, and that's a great question. I'm glad you asked that, because people say, why dachshunds or why Jack Russells? You need to do the research. And like in our case, my animals are always with me. So those are, you know, a good fit for me. But what animal is the best for your family? If you're not around a lot, you know, a dog that needs a ton of attention or any other animal is not a good fit. Do your research and make sure that, you know, that animal doesn't wind up in the shelter. And, you know, people like your girlfriend, those are the people to me that are like my heroes, because they do the work that saves lives. I mean, there really is a cost to doing this, but those are the things that make you feel good. Like, geez, am I doing something that matters?
Bruce, we appreciate the time. This has been a lot of fun. Appreciate your openness, your honesty. Appreciate all the work that you're doing on the mic and off the mic as well. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me on your show, and thanks for having such a great podcast. And I just got to get you, Arnie, and Rich to talk more hockey.
I know. We're taping this in July. Wait until November, and then we can get talk some hockey.
More Devils.
You know what it is? And I get this criticism in quotes all the time. we're spoiled by the fact that the Red Sox are so good and that the Patriots are so good and that the Celtics have been in a position to be a top seed in the playoffs, because if we didn't have those things, there'd be more room for hockey. But when we start thinking about a baseball season that goes in until October, well, now the opening month of hockey is downgraded on the pecking order.
As it should be.
When we talk about a football season that's going to go into February, now you're missing 3 months of the hockey season, and then we come out of football season, so we get to Valentine's Day, and then we finally have time for hockey and basketball, and then spring training starts, and again, all three of them are now sharing airwaves with each other. So it's hard to get everything, the requisite coverage that it probably deserves.
We're also spoiled in this area and the Boston area, because look at the dynasty. You've got the greatest NFL quarterback ever in Tom Brady. You got the Red Sox, who have been amazing. The Celtics are on the upswing. And, you know, you got the Bruins, unfortunately losing the Stanley Cup final, but really spoiled with such great sports in our area.
Bruce, we appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Brady.